Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Ashley and I will bring you those stories, along with Katie Weaver and Mario Ritter. Dan Friedel will tell us what's trending today, and later, Phil Dierking will bring us this week's education report. But first, here is Mario Ritter.
Nations are expressing support for new United Nations restrictions placed on North Korea in reaction to its sixth nuclear test. The UN Security Council voted 15-0 to approve new sanctions. The Council hopes the measures will force North Korea to observe existing UN resolutions. South Korea's presidential office said the vote showed that the UN was sending a united message. The only way for it, North Korea, to get out of diplomatic isolation and economic pressure is to come back to the dialogue table, said Park Soo-hyun, a presidential spokesman. Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe also welcomed the new sanctions. He said it was important to use pressure to change North Korea's weapons development policy. The United States Ambassador to the UN, Nikki Haley, praised the vote. She said the world would not accept a nuclear-armed North Korea. Haley said the world would act if North Korea failed to disarm itself. UN Security Council Resolution 2375 aims to punish North Korea for its September 3rd nuclear test. The test was recorded as a 6.3 magnitude earthquake. North Korea says the test was of a hydrogen bomb, a weapon far more powerful than those tested earlier. In reaction, the Security Council agreed to target North Korea's trade and fuel imports. The resolution calls for cutting North Korea's oil imports by one-third. Haley called oil the lifeblood of the nation's effort to develop a nuclear weapon. North Korean imports of other fuels, including gas, are to drop by more than one-half. The resolution also targets sources of income. It bans sales of textiles, meaning cloth or clothing, by North Korea. Haley said this ban would cost North Korea nearly $800 million a year. The resolution seeks to bar new work permits for North Korean workers employed in other countries. North Korea has long been accused of using money paid to its overseas workers to support its weapons programs. In addition, the Security Council called for freezing the assets of three powerful groups linked to the government. The United States had sought stronger measures against North Korea. At first, the U.S. called for a complete oil embargo and a freeze on the assets of leader Kim Jong-un. It also sought to permit military force, if necessary, to stop ships supplying banned goods. However, China and Russia pushed for the compromise version that the UN Security Council approved. Both China and Russia are permanent Security Council members and hold veto power on resolutions. Both countries say that discussions are the only way to solve the North Korean issue. On Tuesday, China's official Xinhua news agency called for talks. It described the dispute as a situation where nuclear and missile tests trigger tougher sanctions, and tougher sanctions invite further tests. China and Russia also have urged the United States to suspend its joint military training with South Korea in exchange for a North Korean nuclear freeze. However, supporters of the Trump administration's policy of maximum pressure on North Korea say the most recent sanctions are not enough. I'm Mario Ritter.
In the controlled environment of the United States military, the big room with shiny white paint stands out. The room has computer workstations, overhead projectors, and a digital clock that shows the current time in cities around the world. But what captures the attention of many visitors are the walls. They are covered from top to bottom with questions, mathematical notations, pictures, and ideas. These markings represent the best thinking of some of the greatest minds in the military. There are precious few places in this building where you can write on a wall, said Albert Bolden. His claim is not too surprising, since this area, the Innovation Hub, or iHub, is part of a military base. Bolden is Director of Innovation at the U.S. Defense Intelligence Agency. People from across the agency can come into this space and figure out how to solve our problems, he said. This might seem like a feel-good story of military structure mixing with Silicon Valley creativity to make life easier with technology. But it is about much more. Marine Lieutenant General Vincent Stewart has served as the DIA's director. He said, "The fight for remaining relevant in this digital age is what keeps me awake." Stewart made clear that it is, in many ways, an arms race. Our adversaries have been modernizing, he warned, speaking to a small group of reporters and others at the iHub in August. The agency had invited business representatives and academic experts there for a series of what were called industry days.
Such meetings between top thinkers at the DIA and those outside of government are an important part of iHub's planning. U.S. officials want to know if commercial technologies could help solve problems that agency experts have identified. One company seeking to be part of this effort is a Texas-based startup business called Spark Cognition. It specializes in artificial intelligence, making computers perform work that normally requires human intelligence. The U.S. Air Force has already shown an interest in Spark Cognition. Also, large companies like Verizon and Boeing are now investing more than $30 million in the small startup's neural network effort. It is designed to copy the operations of a human brain in order to predict results. What we've done is automate that research that a data scientist would do, said Spark Cognition's Sam September. Instead of taking weeks or days, however, September said his company's systems can provide results in hours or even minutes. Spark Cognition says its platforms already have succeeded in predicting some major world events, although the test cases still leave room for improvement. The human factor got involved and skewed it, said Timothy Stefanik, director of business operations at the company. He explained that some predictions were found to be wrong after human experts did not trust the results from the artificial intelligence.
Another company seeking to work with the DIA is Percipient.ai. It is exploring how to make artificial intelligence useful in video work. This is a kind of capability that helps you get into productive analytics and helps you protect forces, said company co-founder Balan Iyer. You can check any person in any video, he said. Iyer is a retired Air Force Brigadier General. He and fellow Percipient.ai co-founder Raj Shah say their platform can save experts considerable time. For example, the AI could quickly search for terror suspects in hundreds of hours of video from a terror attack. Even mobile phones could be used to follow possible threats, programmed to shake if a person of interest turns up in a selfie. With this kind of system, the terror watch list could be much, much bigger, said Shah, who formerly was chief of Google Maps. Iyer and Shah say Percipient.ai's systems can already identify suspicious activity or equipment.
For DIA, the early results have been promising. We've seen examples when machines are able to provide insights to the analysts that they haven't had, said Randy Soper, a DIA expert on analytics modernization. To speed up the process, DIA even provides money, up to about $250,000, to projects that have shown the most promise. Two have already been approved. Four others are on a list to receive money as soon as it is available. More projects could soon be added. DIA's Innovation Hub continues considering proposals from industry and academia. But the success in reaching out to industry and universities also has brought some changes to the program. On August 22nd, the DIA opened up a new innovation hub. At first look, it is smooth and modern. A line of computer screens and a digital world clock. A large conference table is in the center of the room. But much of the room is covered in that white, shiny paint. You can still write on the walls, said one official. I'm Katie Weaver.
The number of Americans who identify as white and Christian now represent less than 50% of the United States population. A new study says immigrants have driven the decrease, along with a growing number of Americans who reject organized religion. The Public Religion Research Institute, or PRRI, did the study. It questioned more than 100,000 people between January 2016 and January 2017. It found that Christianity overall remains a large majority. Nearly 70% of Americans identify themselves as Christian. However, white Christians, once dominant, now make up only 43% of the national population. 40 years ago, about 80% of Americans were white Christians. Today, about 25% of Americans do not identify with a single religion, the study found. About 17% of Americans now identify as white evangelical Christians, compared to 23% 10 years ago. In the 2016 presidential election, Donald Trump, a Republican, received 80% of the votes of white evangelicals. The PRRI study found that more than one-third of all Republicans say they are white evangelicals, and nearly 75% of Republicans identify themselves as white Christians. By comparison, about 8% of Democrats call themselves white evangelicals. Almost 30% of Democrats identify as white Christians, and 40% of Democrats say they have no religious affiliation. The latest PRRI study also provided state-by-state details. It found that New York is the state with the greatest religious diversity. The southern state of Mississippi has the least religious diversity. The northeastern U.S. has long been where most of American Catholics live, and the northeastern state of Rhode Island remains the most Catholic state in the country. However, the Catholic population in the country is shifting, PRRI reports. A majority of Catholics in the U.S. now live in the South or West. The change comes from an increase in Latin American immigrants settling in those areas.
This is What's Trending Today. The most popular topic on social media on Tuesday was the Big Apple event in California. The event took place at the Steve Jobs Theater in Apple's new headquarters in Cupertino, California. People all over the world wanted to know about the new iPhone. The main trending hashtags and topics related to Apple's announcement were hashtag Apple event, iPhone 8, Steve Jobs Theater, and Apple TV 4K. Others appeared on social media during the event, which continued for over 2 hours. Before Apple chief Tim Cook came on the stage to start the event, one Twitter user wrote that he had fallen asleep waiting. The big news of the day was the iPhone 8 and the chance that an even more advanced iPhone would be revealed.
But first, several Apple executives spoke with the audience. One spoke about Apple stores. She said the stores will now be called town squares. Lily Rugo is a writer in Boston. She responded to this idea with a joke, saying she will continue to call the place where people go to buy Apple products a store. Apple spoke to its audience about changes to Apple TV and the Apple Watch. The leaders also spoke about how its new campus was built with a number of environmentally friendly features. Paul Haddad wrote, "Apple Park, the reason the iPhone is now $1,200. And after 55 minutes, Apple CEO Tim Cook finally mentioned an iPhone. The audience cheered, and many people watching the event online were relieved. The waiting paid off as Philip Schiller came out to talk about the new phones, iPhone 8 and 8 Plus. About 20 minutes later, when Schiller was done, Tim Cook came back on the stage. He said, "But we're not stopping there. We do have one more thing." After a short music video, Cook presented the iPhone X, and he pronounced the X as the number 10. Schiller returned to discuss the iPhone X. He said, "The main difference from earlier versions of the iPhone is that the screen has no outside border. There is also no home button. For many years, owners used the button at the bottom of the phone to unlock it and get to the main screen. Now there will be a feature called Face ID. The phone will recognize its owner and open the home screen. People will be able to order the iPhone X in late October. It will be available about a week later. It will cost $999. Some people wondered why there will not be an iPhone 9. Others pointed out that the price of Apple stock on the NASDAQ stock exchange fell as soon as Cook announced the new phones. And that's what's trending today. I'm Dan Friedel.
Now is the time that students and teachers are supposed to be beginning a new year together. But those affected by Hurricane Harvey, which struck Texas earlier this month, have to change their plans. The hurricane damaged an area more than 480 kilometers along the Gulf Coast. It affected more than 1 million students and 220 school districts. Officials in many of those districts are still examining their properties to see if people can even come on campus. In Houston, the largest school district, the superintendent says he is bringing in crisis counselors to help students traumatized by the storm. The hurricane poured more than 100 centimeters of water on the city. Superintendent Richard Carranza added that employees have also been affected by the storm. They have lost everything and are coming to work and expected to provide support and encouragement to students, Carranza said. He said it does not matter how well you plan for an emergency. The true impact of a situation of this magnitude is something that no one can really plan for. Some school leaders who have survived similar disasters are sharing their advice. Carrie Sachetta is the assistant superintendent for operations in Joplin, Missouri. Sachetta's school district was destroyed by a tornado in 2011. She says the first priority is safety. You have to take care of your own situation before you can help someone else, Sachetta said. Frank Scarifile is the superintendent of the Little Ferry School District in New Jersey. In late October 2012, most of Little Ferry was underwater after a nearby river overflowed. The flood caused nearly $6 million in damages to the district's two buildings. The district closed for 2 weeks. Scarifile said that once his students were back in school, teachers looked for signs of trauma. When you had a really bad rainstorm afterwards, their fear was that they were going to get flooded again, Scarifile said. They were afraid. That was part of getting displaced. That was part of losing everything. There was a lot of anxiety. Robert Ramirez is the superintendent in Moore, Oklahoma. He agrees that after a natural disaster, mental health should become a priority for school leadership. Mental health is especially important for communities where children may be experiencing death and trauma for the first time, he said. Angela Stallings is the associate superintendent for the Pasadena Independent School District near Houston. One of their high schools was used as an emergency shelter during the storm. Stallings said that she is already hearing about students' feelings of anxiety. Her district will be offering counselors for a long time, she said. Carol Salva teaches English language development in the Spring Branch District in Houston. She spent a few tense days at home with two of her children, ages 10 and 13, before finally deciding to evacuate. Her neighborhood did not have an order to leave. However, her home would have been in the path of destruction if one of the nearby dams broke. Neighbors were leaving, and helicopters were rescuing some people in nearby neighborhoods. It's just very scary to live so close to those reservoirs that you're seeing on the news, she said. Salva finally left the neighborhood 3 days after the storm. She is already thinking about how to discuss the disaster once she returns to school. She is especially worried about how the storm affected some of the refugees who had recently settled in the area. Hurricane Harvey will also affect students who do not go to school in places struck by the storm. Their districts will have to accept children who can no longer return to their schools. Last week, the Austin, Dallas, and San Antonio districts were preparing to take in displaced students. People throughout the region were offering services and support to help them. Superintendent Nicholas Gleditch, whose district suffered a forest fire in 2012, knows the impact a natural disaster has on all communities. You know in your heart and your mind that Houston needs support and resources, said Gleditch. But let me tell you, those other districts will need resources too. I'm Phil Dierking.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.